A lesser heard story about the apartheid forced removals concerns the forced sales of homes in whites-only areas. After stumbling across a Dutch language Bible among her family heirlooms, Candace Nolan learnt about the Grand Apartheid house robbery. The state forced hundreds of thousands of people to sell their homes before resettling them on the fringes of society. I'm your host, Morris Nolan, and this is part two of the series entitled Omatitis, A Quest for My Zulu Ancestor.
Hello there. How are you? Yes. You're here for the virtual haircut? Yes, okay. I will go get Luigi. He will come and cut your hair. I am Manuel. Just stay right there.
Apartheid was a hair salon.
Luigi! Luigi! It's Manuel here. The person is here for your virtual haircut. You better come up.
I've heard that in the South Africa of today, you can be classified as colored simply by looking colored. Is this, in point of fact, true?
Well, I can give you a quote which may seem amusing, but rather humiliating incidents that occurred in our country when the Department of Census started reclassifying people. They hauled people of the trams in the mornings out of the bus queues and took them up to the Native Commissioner's office. And some of the tests applied to tell a man that he was not colored was trying to pass a comb through his hair. And the comb stuck, he was told, "You're a Kaffir." Other people whose noses were a bit flat were told, "You're not a colored."
"I'm dark of complexion." They thought I was Indian. So they thought.
Jimmy passed the pencil test, but failed the exam.
I said, "Now, am I okay as what? If I pass this pencil test or this comb test, what am I? Am I white? Because a white person, the comb will not stick in his hair." I say, "It means nothing to me. You can put it through my hair, pull it through, then what do you say, what am I? Just because the comb didn't get stuck, I'm colored. Why am I not white? Tell me why am I not white? Because you told me now, if it gets stuck, then I am a black. What kind of a black am I? A black, like a South African black? What do you mean by that?" Anyhow, no, they tell me I'm trying to be too clever.
Sandra Lang was a white girl trapped in a brown skin.
En ons sal bly voortbestaan as ons die tekens gee dat ons wil voortgaan met die werk van die voortplanting en die behoud en die veredeling van die westerse beskawing en tradities in hierdie suidpunt van Afrika.
This was the world of the Lang family in 1955. Sonny and Abram were staunch Afrikaners who supported and believed in the government of the day. It served them well. Then their daughter, Sandra, was born. Unlike her older brother, Sandra was much darker than her parents, but it didn't seem to matter. She was their child, they said. They loved her as much as they did her lighter-skinned baby. Parents had petitioned the school to have Sandra expelled. The committee decided to refer her case to the Department of Home Affairs, where she was officially classified black. Callously, the administrator of the Transvaal authorized her expulsion, and in Piet Retief, laws were obeyed. While Sandra's lighter-skinned younger brother was allowed to remain and finish school, she became homebound, with her father as educator. For 2 years, he battled with the authorities to have his isolated and dejected daughter reclassified white. Sandra was already in her 20s by the time she finally managed to get any form of legal identification. Wanting to be with Petrus, with whom she already had 2 children, she applied for a so-called colored ID. But her father didn't want his then-classified white daughter, who was once classified black, to be reclassified colored.
Little Wilma grew up in a mixed-race neighborhood.
We always went to the N Street Park. And we even knew the parkie, the one who looked after the place. And I remember must have been probably 1954, 1955, when I was about, because I'm born in 47, so it's, you talk about 7, 8 years old. This same parkie came to my brother, myself, and my two sisters and said that we can't play in the park anymore. And we asked him why, and he said, because we're colored. And I remember going home and saying to my mother, telling my mother that the man had told us we can't play in the park anymore, and because we're colored, what is colored? Because you remember 1953 is when the separate amenities and the group areas, that's when it started.
What did your mom say?
My mother probably just said, ah, you know, just let's leave it. Because that is how most of our people probably reeling from this new thing and not knowing how to deal with it.
So you never actually got an answer?
No. No. I need to tell a very funny story. After that, I thought, well, you know, colored people are really not allowed to do anything. So my father buys this old car. And we're living in Albertville, and we must go up to the butcher in Melville. So you know the Melville Hill. And this old car is practically hogging the curb. And I'm thinking, oh, must be because we're colored. We're not allowed to ride. Because you're a little girl between 7 and 8. And this, you know, you're not allowed here, you're not allowed there, or whatever.
And then democracy dawned, and being African was suddenly in vogue.
And in the knowledge that none dares contest that assertion, I shall claim that I'm an African. I have seen our country torn asunder as these, all of whom are my people, engage one another in a titanic battle, the one to redress a wrong that had been caused by one to another, and the other to defend the indefensible. I have seen what happens when one person has superiority of force over another, when the stronger appropriate to themselves the prerogative even to annul the injunction that God created all men and women in his image.
With these words, Thabo Mbeki heralded the passing of South Africa's new constitution, but it was too little, too late for Claudette. Her grandfather, Stoffel, used his life savings to build a home as a legacy for his children. The apartheid state stole it away.
So for me, the way things were done then was, it's hard.
Can you put a price on it, do you think? If you could.
On the property itself, on the loss of the heritage, the history in that area, I don't know. I can't say. Our only valuable is the memories that we have, if we talk about it, but no money can be put into what has been lost.
Apartheid was really not rocket science. It was, simply put, a land grab by white people. D.F. Milan told his parliament, quote, what we have in this bill before us is apartheid. Unquote. He was referring to the Group Areas Act. This was the law they used to dispossess people like Opa Stoffel and Little Wilma. The most amended piece of legislation, the Group Areas Act, forced sales on a fixed municipal value. If someone managed to sell their property on the open market, the Group Areas Development Board took half of the proceeds. And then there were the forced removals.
As a young person, you realize that something was happening with Sophia Town. They were moving the people out of Sophia Town. And you got those songs about meadowlands, we're not going to Onstakni, Onspolai, but meadowlands. And so they were moving the people out of Sophia Town. And then my dad and everybody else just got an instruction that you had to install flush toilets. You paid for it. Then most of our roads in Albertville were sand roads, which became absolute riverbeds when it rained.
We knew one another that you are from Albertville or you are from Coronationville, put that way. Because Coronationville people, you look at the shoes. Their shoes are clean. You look at Albertville people, their shoes are always muddy, especially after the rain. We were in Albertville for about 5 years, when we heard the news that we must move from there again to a place, this place was called Montelio, Bosmont. I said, where is that? Anyway, at the time we didn't take it very seriously. But when it became serious, it was when they started tarring the roads. And when they started tarring it, we thought, hey, something must be happening here.
But when you look back now, it was all preparing for when they were going to take it away from us. The white people weren't going to come and live there, their rates be taken to pay for those improvements. We paid for it.
Claudette is my mom's cousin. Their grandfathers were brothers. While researching my own family tree, I came across Opa Stoffel's estate file. Finally, Claudette had some answers.
And then things change, but nobody, as I said, as a child, looking through a child's eyes, is no one explained everything. We just saw that we were moving. The furniture's going, it's leaving. The water's cut, I remember we didn't have hot water. Yeah, the house was empty. They couldn't take all the furniture, so somehow they had to give away furniture, because you must remember, it was a huge house. And we had to move into a two-bedroom next to the Catholic Church in Roderick Street. Still nobody said anything. We just moved.
In the very year she was born, her neighborhood was declared a white group area.
And my fond memories was the big yard and the fruit trees that was in that yard and the chicken run that we had, the fowl run that we had. And my grandmother, we're stealing her sweets. We always laugh about it. They ate this triple X Walsons, and she would chase us around the house, which was fairly big. It was quite a big property. This old lady chasing us because we now stole the sweets.
But it was only after her grandmother had died that the family were forced to move.
I remember when she became ill, because she died of a stroke. When she got ill that night, my mother was up. It must have been late that night. And as children, you're hearing the commotion. And then my mother carrying the potty. Because remember, we had our toilets were outside. But your potty was most under the bed. And then we had the, we used to call it the kakabali, the type of pit toilet. So we would keep a potty under your bed for during the night, and they were carrying up and down. I think her tummy must have been working. And then she passed on, and then we had the wake. They called it the wake. So just saw this coffin the morning when we woke up, when we got up as a child. And that's how the adults explained it. We're almost sleeping and just going up to heaven and okay.
Okay.
And I remember I was picked up by my father to touch a forehead, which was ice cold. That was I remembered.
Many believe that people like Oma Eli died of a broken heart. She would have seen the government proclamations and later the eviction notice.
The whole objective, their objective, as far as we were concerned, they didn't want to see us stabilized, to grow as a unit, as a community, because we were just being established. People had built their own homes. And that is what gave people some form of security. That gave them something. They had something because they had the papers to show that they are the owners of this place. And that is what many people wanted. And that is why when it became reality that they are moving us, there are many of the older people who just dropped dead. They died.
Jimmy obtained his PhD from an Afrikaans-only university at the very height of apartheid.
That is where I found this to be most unfair. Because what is it? I am born in a country. I'm born here, born and bred right here. And I don't have the right to live where I want to live. Is there a law which says I must live over here? Is there a law which says, no, you can't live here, you must live there, you can't live there, you must live over there? Is there a law that says that?
So then I could actually say that the apartheid law, they say law is an ass. So basically the apartheid law.
It was an ass. It was. But I couldn't say that to them.
Yeah.
Because I would have landed my ass in where I didn't want to be. Why can't the two of us argue about that?
Yeah.
Talk about it. He can show me, maybe I'm wrong in my way of thinking.
Yeah.
But he can show me that I'm wrong. I'm open to it. But if he can't show me I'm wrong, then he mustn't say, I mustn't live there, I must live there, I mustn't live there, I can't live there. No. Ask yourself, is it fair or is it unfair? That's the question I must ask.
The architect of Grand Apartheid evoked images of white picket fences.
Our policy is one which is called by an Afrikaans word apartheid. And I'm afraid that has been misunderstood so often. It could just as easily, and perhaps much better, be described as a policy of good neighborliness.
Jimmy was living in Albertville at the time.
First of all, we lived in Morkel Street. Now, Morkel Street was too close to the white area. And because we didn't have a place yet, they told us we will have to move.
Accepting that there are differences between people, but while these differences exist, and you have to acknowledge them, at the same time, you can live together, aid one another, but that it can best be done when you act as good neighbors always do.
You know, what was so sad also for me, a personal friend of mine, he was colored, his wife was black. In 1972, when they had to leave, his wife couldn't go with him, and they had three little kids. Unfortunately, all the kids were black, so the kids had to go with the mother to Langa, that's a black township, and he went to Mitchell Spring. And that's what the government actually did to people, separate them from their own families. He couldn't see his wife. If you want to see his wife, he's got to go to the police station and apply for a permit. And they will give him a permit every 3 months for 2 hours only. He didn't see his children grow up. And that's what our party did, not only to District 6, but throughout South Africa. People were practically kicked out of their homes because of the color of their skin.
What happened to Claudette, Jimmy, and Wilma was never recounted in stories about the forced removals. There were no bulldozers and pickup trucks, just nice, tidy lawyers' letters and proclamations and laws, tucked away in neat little legal binders were consent forms heralding the sale.
Apartheid was an evil, was an ugly system, and it changed people. It changed families, it broke families. It made people base their worth, their self-worth, and who you were on how you looked.
So how do you think they must have felt having to sign consent for this?
Terrible, because, and it's a pity now, it split the family, because Uncle Alfie moved to Cape Town, that's the second eldest brother, and Auntie Olga, one of the sisters, also moved to Cape Town after they had to go.
In Oma Ellie's last will and testament, she leaves the property to her children. But the apartheid government was slick. In a catch-all amendment to the Group Areas Act, they were able to force sales on even those properties acquired before the Act came into effect. 7 months after Oma Ellie had passed away, Zayed Gamit writes to the Master of the Supreme Court, Pretoria. The letter is dated 19 March 1961.
Owing to the fact that Albertville Township was proclaimed a proposed white group area in August 1956, the year you were born, under the jurisdiction of the Group Areas Development Board, it is impossible to dispose of properties in the township other than to the board, as no white persons are at this stage prepared to purchase properties owing to the fact that the area has only been proposed as a white group area and will only become such an area at an unspecified future time. In the circumstance, the price of 2,800 rand is a reasonable one, and you are requested to consent to the sale of the property.
I visited the property recently. The original building is still standing. It's hard to imagine a property like this going for less than a quarter of a million rand in today's money.
Must have been a very big plot indeed, because it looks like it's been subdivided into, you have a 28A and you have a 28B. Walking along the path, right next to the house, this is the yard, or the back portion. Someone's not happy to see me.
Opa Stoffel became the title holder of this property on the 9th of June 1944. He paid £900 sterling, roughly £20,000 in today's money. It's simply ridiculous that the same property should depreciate in value by 50% a mere 10 years later. The smoking gun is this sworn appraisement dated 28 December 1953. It came soon after Opa Stoffel's death, but before the neighborhood was declared a white group area.
Number of stories or basements, 1. It was a total floor area approximately 1,300 square feet.
Can you imagine how big is it? I mean, this is 900. You saw my the size, ne?
Yeah. Whoa.
Now, can you imagine how big was that? Just two properties.
13, Whoa, okay. Approximate total veranda area, 160 square feet. So it was quite a big...
Very big house.
Sure. Walls, brick, roof, iron, ceilings, asbestos, floors, part granolithic, part wood, air conditioning, null, heating, null, lighting, electric, lifts, null, staircases, null, fire escapes, null, stoves, coal, hot water system, coal, stove, sanitation, sewerage, water supply, municipal, approximate age of building, 20 years, condition of building, poor. Other buildings?
That was not true. The poor condition of the building was never. It's still standing. The house is still standing, solid as a rock. All the homes in Albertsville were solid. You can speak to anyone, Auntie Thelma, you can speak, whoever moved from Walma will have excellent memory, she'll tell you. The condition of the homes when we left. Where do you think those poor would move into poor conditions? They went on like it's a shack, it was broken down and things like that. They wouldn't have moved into that house. So we got next to nothing for those houses.
Because of this.
That is, how much was it, 900 today?
The group area's development board would be laughing all the way to the bank after selling these same homes at market value. The board had to create neighborhoods for the displaced colored people. Most of the residents of Albertville were relocated to a dusty expanse in the midst of an industrial belt. The government bought the land for bargain basement prices, with the landlords left with little wriggle room. There was no willing buyer, willing seller principle at play here.
So moving from Albertville for me was very traumatic. Albertville was, maybe I'm glamorizing it, but for me as a child, it was a safe haven. It was a community that you felt safe in, that fed all your needs, you know. It was also almost like a farm. So it was, you would walk through the grass, you would celebrate the change of seasons. Coming to Bosmont for me was, and you must know when we moved, there were no trees and gardens. People had to still develop it. I just found it so dry and dusty. And as much as then my dad built this big four-bedroom home, beautiful home, I always mourned the fact that we had to leave that place to come and live here with no choice in the matter.
The Group Areas Development Board engaged in creative accounting involving taxpayers' money. In 1957, the Secretary of the Treasury wrote to the board asking it to kindly refrain from drawing on current loan provisions to finance its activities. Quote, "It has, however, been brought to the notice of the Treasury that the Board has drawn on the provisions made on loan vote zero during the current financial year instead of first exhausting the unspent funds carried over from the previous year. This procedure is not in accordance with the established practice that funds may not be drawn from the Exchequer in advance of requirements, and the Board is requested to follow the correct procedure." Unquote. Wilma still feels bitter when she thinks of Albertsville.
So for many people who had a settled home, it was an uprooting and you had to go and start again. For me, the biggest problem that I had, because by then I was 15 years old and I think I understood again this, because from Doornfontein we had to move. No choice. Yeah, we have to move again. And the sentiments around was, well, we are this black colored spot because Sophiatown was becoming Triumph. And there was now Greymont and there was this Montgomery Park. So we now cannot be here because how can you be a colored area amongst all the whites? I resented it terribly. I still do, because now when I go back to Albertville, there are black people and colored people living there again. So what was it all about?
This podcast was written and produced by Candace Nolan and Spodcaster. Credits go to T-Main for Virtual Barbershop, Archie Coca and Meteors for Meadowlands. Special assignment for their feature on Sandra Lang and Stevie Wonder for the song Apartheid is Wrong. All material used in terms of fair use policy. This podcast was brought to you by Spodcaster and Baobab.org.